This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Hello and welcome back to the Financial Standard podcast. I'm Jamie Williamson, Managing Editor of Financial Standard. As we all know, Australia's superannuation system is the envy of much of the world, and as it matures, is becoming increasingly complex and competitive. Looking at the system today and the factors shaping it, Mercer's inaugural Shaping Super report paints a picture of what the industry will look like in the years to come and how it's going to get there. Joining me to discuss the report's findings and top predictions is lead author and Mercer principal Richard Dunn and Mercer's superannuation consulting leader Tim Jenkins. Thank you so much to both of you for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you indeed.
This is obviously quite a significant report that you've pulled together here. It's very data rich and it really takes you on a journey in terms of the evolution of the industry to now and into the future. In your opinion, Tim, where is the superannuation market at today and what has evolved to get it to where it is?
That's a really good question, Jamie, here. Maybe I could answer this to start with by painting a picture of what's changed in the last 10 years. It's quite phenomenal when you step back and you think about that.
Yep.
So in the last 10 years, I'm going to quote some stats here. The number of funds has more than halved, but the assets in superannuation has more than doubled. And we have 15% fewer member accounts than we did 10 years ago. So that is quite a change in composition of the superannuation system in Australia.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we now extend that forward, what do we think it's going to look like in 5 years' time or even 25 years' time? Now, obviously, it's easier to predict the medium term than it is long term. But in the next 5 years, what we are predicting is that the number of funds will decrease by another 25%. So we're seeing a number of funds, it's already hovering about 100 down to about 70 to 75 funds in 5 years' time. But at the same time, we're seeing asset growth, obviously subject to market performance, and there's assumptions in everything that we do, increasing by 30%. Assets heading towards $5 trillion from the current $3.7 trillion in 5 years' time. And probably slightly fewer member accounts as well. So how do we take that forward for 25 years' time? And what we're seeing in 25 years' time, our prediction is we're going to be ending up with perhaps only 20 to 35 funds, half of those what we might call a mega fund, probably with assets at that stage of more than 250 billion, something like that, or even some heading towards themselves, $1 trillion.
Yeah.
And then we'll have a series of niche funds with something special about them, which means that members want to be in those funds. And assets up to $14 trillion in 25 years' time. That's tomorrow's numbers a little bit, but you know that is a very substantive share of the GDP, about 180%. And a system heading towards a maturity, West G will have been 12% for 20 years by then. And everyone retiring from the workforce will have been in the SG system, probably at 9% or more for longer. So a very significant contributor to the Australian investment environment. And I think it's going to lead to quite a few changes there to how products work, how people service the members. It's a different environment when you're in a land of the giant.
Yeah, absolutely. And with all that Tim's just said in mind, Richard, like, where do you see the system now heading?
Absolutely. Well, look, it's clear that it's going to be a completely different landscape and the system will continue to evolve, and both the funds and the policymakers that engage with the system will really have to think about how they deliver great outcomes, not only for Australia, but for the members that they serve. And that really has to be the key core component. Obviously, it will depend between fund to fund and between policymakers about where that focus needs to lie and what that future state means. But in the context of the numbers that Tim's been quoting, there are a few components of the system that will almost fix themselves or improve themselves via inertia of the system. Like, we've set the system up with some incredibly strong parameters, mandatory SG, the relatively high allocations to growth assets. Those will continue to drive quite strong outcomes, both for the system in terms of its scale, but also for the members. So where I expect to see things heading is really a question around what won't be fixed by inertia? Where do funds and policymakers need to focus into the future? So three examples come to mind particularly. The first is around the choice sector. We've seen assets in the MySuper system, at least assets, come to about 40% of total assets in the system. But that's mirrored almost by, in the accumulation choice sector, an equal and balancing 40%. So there's a real asset base there that will likely continue into the future that funds need to address and really deliver for their members on. One of the key findings in the report is that within that segment, there's a large proportion, about 30% of investment options that have less than $5 million in assets under management. And so the real question becomes, look, not necessarily all of those options are subscale, and there will be options that trustees are using, but how can you engage with those options to make sure that they're well-structured and sensibly set up to give members both meaningful choice while providing good outcomes? The next and probably a more higher-level piece is, as that market changes and evolves and develops, it's an ecosystem. It's not just the members. Yes, the members are center and focused and need to be the focus. But to set a system up, an ecosystem up like that for success, there's a whole raft of providers, administrators, asset consultants, actuaries even, that really engage to bring the system to life. But in a world where the number of providers and third parties are reducing, the question has to be, how is the system working together to deliver for the members? Food for thought. The final example is really around that member experience. One of the more concerning findings from the report is that there have been some developments in recent years that at least call into question the member experience. Net promoter scores in the industry are slightly challenged. We've seen the number of complaints increase. And so I really expect to see funds particularly really focusing in on that member experience, asking the question, what do my members actually want? And then going to deal to that.
Okay. Well, I mean, with all of that context now kind of on the table there, Tim, where do you think superannuation funds will focus in the near term? What are kind of the immediate priorities for super funds now, do you think?
Well, as part of the Shaping Super report, we actually extended it to exactly what you've asked, saying, in the next 12 months, what are the top 10 priorities that you might choose to focus on? Now, obviously, different funds and trustees are in different places, and what's important for one trustee might be lower down the list for another.
Of course, yeah.
But I think for every trustee of a fund out there, there'll be two areas that they really will choose to focus on this year. The first of those is member outcomes. Making sure that they're improved. And I'll go through a little bit what we mean by that.
Yeah.
And the second piece is a real focus on retirement income phase. Now, even if a trustee didn't want to do those two, the regulators are encouraging them to focus on both improved member outcomes and retirement income phase. How do you improve the outcomes for people entering retirement, mm-hmm. approaching retirement, and in retirement itself? So if we look at the improved member outcomes, if we were to choose, what are the first two things you might look at there? Because there's a myriad of things. And one of those, of course, is to comply with the new updated SPS 515, which we expect will be in force by 1 January 2025, with the uplift in many areas of that. The first one is, please, please, please pass the performance test for all your investment products. If you don't, particularly for MySuper, that's existential.
Yeah.
You will not have permission to play unless you focus on passing the test.
Yeah.
Now, there is consultation out on that, but the prospect of any change to the test in the next year or two is very low. So you can probably bet with a high percentage of probability that the test will apply to the same products in a year's time as it does now.
Yeah.
We'll see. Sometimes you're wrong on predictions, but that's what I imagine. So please pass that. The second bit that goes to that is, to Richard's point earlier, you want to make sure that you look at your subscale investment options alongside that. You use the opportunity of the performance test to say, what's my investment menu like?
Yeah.
Is it coherent? Does it make sense? Am I splitting things the right way between retirement phase, accumulation phase? Are there too many options that look the same.
Mm, yeah.
You know, there's many things to think about. Put the two together and you hope that you will improve member outcomes by a focus on those areas.
Yeah.
The other one, and we're getting great encouragement, we being the funds, great encouragement from the regulators, is everything these days when they talk member outcomes is about cohort. It's a word we didn't hear 4 or 5 years ago. So they're starting to unpack that and saying, it's not fine looking at averages. You've got to think about different groups. Is it working for your member there with a low balance? Is it working there for your person in gig type employment? Is it working for your person over age 60? So think about what you're providing. Look at the outcomes, slice and dice with as much data as you've got to try and get the themes and improve member outcomes based on what you see. Again, if you don't do that, the regulator will be encouraging you to do that for you. And then, of course, the last bit on that is so many of the metrics now look at the cost of what you do, not just the benefits you get. Obviously, cost goes in, that's what you charge. But try and get the efficiencies of scale. If there is an efficiency of scale, an asset size on its own does not mean scale. Am I looking at the number of divisions and categories and do I do it one way, same way, et cetera? How do I bring true scale to my environment?
Yeah.
And then quickly just on to the retirement phase. This is such an emerging area, but yes, there's been people in the super system in retirement phase since super started, right? But with the changes proposed to the legislation, the Delivering Better Financial Outcomes package from the government in response to the Quality of Advice review, there is uncertainty. You're not quite sure where it's landing on this. Yet there's such an expectation with the introduction of the retirement income covenant that trustees move beyond the traditional fiduciary role. I'm looking after the assets of my member, to giving advice, to giving assistance. These are words that didn't appear before. And now all of a sudden, that's in there. And you're having to think about different aspects, maximizing retirement income, sustainability. You're trying to think about also access to capital, you know, all the different risks, a lot going into that. So how you give the help, the guidance, and the advice becomes critical on this. And trustees are going to have to focus on that and try and nail that in this uncertain environment. If you're allowed to give more intra-fund advice and, you know, or package for the same fee, what are you doing and how do you know that's in the overall member's best financial interests? So they're the two I'd be focusing on. There's a long list of another 8, though, if you choose to go to the report.
Having considered all of those now, Richard, what do you think that this means for future consolidation and the ultimate maturity of our superannuation funds?
Really good question. Look, I think that it means quite simply that it's getting harder for funds. And the reality is that as the report projects, over the next decade, we'll probably see a halving of the number of funds. The future state will probably see 2/3 of the funds that are currently operating wind up. And transition into another fund. So the real question becomes, a desire to survive and a desire to keep delivering is probably not sufficient anymore. The real question is how you set up to thrive in this current changing market with this raft of competing priorities. Because realistically, a fund that is just trying to get to tomorrow probably won't make it to the day after tomorrow. In terms of what that means for the funds, it just means really being clear about what is the member outcome that you're trying to chase. What is the value that you're trying to provide to the members that have trusted you with their funds? Realistically, for funds who can't decide that, those at the small end of town, look, you can see a world where a question gets asked, what is the outcome that's being provided that can't be provided elsewhere, potentially at greater scale? For the funds at the higher end of town, the question comes, well, yes, but how are you differentiated meaningfully from one fund to the other, or are you all just the same? We're clearly seeing funds start to take steps in those directions, and that's a really exciting thing to see, but it's likely that we'll see more coming down the line that way. So what does that all mean practically? Well, the first step from my perspective is that funds need to really take a good look internally and say, in a world where we're setting up to thrive rather than just survive, are we set up for success? To the point around investment options before, is there any inefficiency or is there any complexity there that we just don't need? how can we get rid of that to solve better outcomes for our members, to deliver better fees, just to make our investment menu simpler? What is the underlying governance that we've set up our fund to do? Consider that at the moment, about a quarter of the funds, according to APRA data, outsource, at least directly manage, 50% or more of their assets internally. There's an inherent level of governance that you need to make sure that that delivers. It's not quite as simple as picking up the phone and firing the fund manager. The real question is, how are your processes set up to really deliver and make sure that those directly held assets and everything else that's managed internally is delivering to what you need? A similar example applies for the externally managed assets. It's just slightly different. Once the house is in order, the question then needs to turn to a triaging process. Realistically, as much as funds and as much as I would like to do everything, realistically, there's a list of 10 priorities. There's probably a large number more that funds might have on their horizon. And the question becomes, in a world where we acknowledge that resources are finite and we can't do everything, what is it that our members are truly going to value? Do we have a whole bunch of members heading for retirement? Well, yeah. In that case, perhaps it makes sense to take some small, meaningful steps into retirement. Not wait for the whiz-bang solution, but how can we actually deliver value? A good example is the 17% of funds that are currently offering a pension transfer bonus. A small, meaningful step that can clearly deliver value for members. It's little thoughts like that, and being really meaningful, making small or not so small iterative improvements over time to really deliver for your members, and pull that all together in a strategy that is clear, coherent, and easily communicated to members, even if there's a lot of complexity under the hood.
Well, unfortunately, that's all we have time for today, guys. I'm really sorry about that, but you've both provided so much food for thought there, and it's clear that the industry is at a real crossroads, and it's going to be interesting to see how this evolution plays out. So thank you again, Richard and Tim, for joining us on the pod today.
Thank you very much for having us. It was a lot of fun.
And thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.